not satisfied in my own mind that this is a good idea.
Okay.
Well, that's pretty much my feeling too. I mean, we've got a real public policy decision to make on whether we're going to subject public officials to punitive damages, and then we've got to decide whether those are going to be reimbursed or whether, in fact, I mean, is the state going to end up paying the bill or not?
We've if Senate Bill 42 becomes the law, we've decided that.
Yeah.
Under current law, they don't.
And, yeah, that's right.
So we could go back and have that discussion again. I guess the only thing we'd add to it is the law isn't settled at the moment because we don't know whether 42 will pass the Senate and the House. I would say it's got about a 95% probability, but that ain't a certainty. I think we can be pretty sure it won't be vetoed.
Yeah, I think you can say that.
Seems to me that this bill fits hand in glove with the 42. And although I know that I'm sure by her presence here that the state court administrator sees it might have some cost, therefore she must resist, which is her job, it would shift a burden onto the state courts, but I think I've been convinced it would save money even for unsuccessful defendants, their agencies, because it would be cheaper done in state court rather than filing these things out in federal court. Suppose I've got a potential conflict under the substantial benefit theory, and somehow, I don't know how it would cut, but I have filed a case in federal court under the 1983 action.
Mr. Chairman.
I don't think this bill would... anyway, Senator Brown.
I think I'm basically supportive of the bill, but I'm just concerned, has all of the interested parties that are going to be impacted by this had an opportunity to see the amendments?
No.
With sponsors?
That's what really makes me
the OAA and... And... I don't see any comments here from state courts, cities, county schools.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to go ahead and vote yes on this motion, but I don't want to get committed to following that vote on the floor because I really do want to resolve a couple of issues in my own mind, but. To expedite the matter.
I'm open to your suggestions on this, but maybe we should adopt the amendment and put this back on.
I wouldn't necessarily oppose it. I mean, I just am not quite completely comfortable with it yet.
I may not
be supporting it eventually, so, you know.
What would be the best way for the two of you, though, to have a few more days and have it back on the agenda?
That might be and I'd like to read those other two cases that skip the ones that those were either of those included in that initial packet.
I think I gave you the famous footnote from Sterling versus Cup.
Maybe that case plus the other one that he just referred to.
or we could move it out and council could prepare the measure summary and all that, and with the understanding that we would. Wait to hear from you before we file it.
Yeah, in that case, I'd vote no at this time, but I might reconsider and vote yes on the floor.
I like the first approach better.
You like the first approach better? All right. I'll follow your suggestion, since I think we should not rush anyone in this. This is a very interesting change.
Yeah, it is. Interesting, yeah.
Why don't we go ahead and vote on the amendment, and then we'll take the bill up further. We'll reschedule it.
I'll vote for the amendment, and then we'll just, on the assumption we will not be passed the law.
That won't bind you to voting for send the bill out there. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Brown.
We'll start, I think we all generally know our time constraints, but I am concerned.
About the time running out?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you want to, I don't want to delay it. So if you, you know.
I would.
Something else would run out, I think, if we didn't have about six, at least six votes from the committee on the floor. Senator Hendrickson?
I just want to say for the record, since Judge Bonebrake is here, that at least my understanding of this bill, should it, and I hope it does become law, is that the ordinary common law doctrines of immunities would be applied to it, and that is my understanding in terms of suits that were filed under this provision.
I concur on that, and I think by the approach we're taking here today, maybe we'll, by the time we take it up again, Judge Bonebrake will have been able to find some words we could put in that would make that even clearer, if possible.
Yeah.
And we'll try and help if we can.
Well, in the event we don't, I don't think we really need to. I think those common law doctrines are pretty well established. And
You can't repeal them unless you expressly do so.
Is there any objection to the chair's motion to amend Senate Bill 297? If not, it's so ordered, and we will reschedule this bill at our earliest possible time. We have three more bills. We have five members here, and the two members that went to Energy and Environment apparently will not be back this evening. That meeting is broken up, and apparently the members of that committee have left the bill. Senate Bill 397, this is the bill to repeal the abortion statutes that have been held unconstitutional. There was a point made at the hearing on this bill that there was one point that had been put into the bill that was not, had not been specifically held unconstitutional. The amendment we have here would delete that language from the bill.
Is that the one? I wanted the conscience clause kept in
yes.
there so that people
yes.
don't have to.
Which one is it?
The conscience clause that people don't have to perform abortions if they, medical providers, if they.
Right.
It was not, the portions that are being repealed are four specific statutes that were declared unconstitutional in the Benson case. 435.435 sub 3 was not, because it was not at issue. The other statutes being repealed are so interrelated with those statutes. They are the definitions section, the emergency exception provision to the statutes, which you don't need an exception to if you don't have the statutes,
mm-hmm.
a statute that says it has no effect on the sale of birth control devices, and the reporting statute. But now the reporting statute made reference to this act, to the statute under which places where abortions are performed are public nuisances. That reporting statute is being amended in the vital statistics bill to provide consistent national information. If they can get that into constitutional shape, then the reporting statute would survive in whatever form the health division needs it in.
Okay.
So for this bill to repeal it and have the other bill reinstated, I think would not be a problem, would it?
Yeah.
Subsequent bill. Another issue.
Whose amendments are dash one? Are these yours? Are these Marcy's? And
I drew these up after the last hearing, Legislative Council.
And these are concurred in by the proponents of the bill.
Yes.
I don't have a copy of this, but I wanted to. The other thing I was looking at, Rita Radich's. The other thing I was concerned about that she raised was that if we keep the abortion statute, which that you can't make having an abortion or refusing an abortion a condition for services or any kind
that's
of
it.
Privilege? Is that
that's
is
in
that
these amendments? Well, that's the.
So there's two issues: there's the conscience clause of people not having to form them if they don't want to, and then not requiring people to have them as any kind of.
Where's the conscience clause?
You meant the conscience clause for the doc?
Yeah.
That's sections 2 and 3 of the bill, the conscience clause provisions.
Is that?
And they're essentially left intact, except
right.
for technical amendments.
Right.
But
that is the bill, basically. Yeah. It would just be the conscience clause and the
The privilege and immunities.
But Mr. Chairman,
Senator Brown,
I've looked through Ms. Radich's brief, and she's a member of the bar and has, of course, a major concern in this area, and a number of the points that she raises in her three-page brief I don't think have been addressed. And I think we ought to at least spend 5 minutes at least noting them and then trying to find out how the bill addresses them. If I just may go through two or three of these items. She says that currently ORS 435.455, which is to be repealed totally by this bill, currently prohibits a person other than a doctor from performing abortions and prohibits aiding a woman to perform a self-abortion. Now, why has there been any constitutional language indicating that that particular provision, 0.455, is not sound legislation?
Yes, the Benson case said it was unconstitutional.
Benson case says it's unconstitutional to make it a crime. To assist a person in performing self-abortions or to assist a person other than a doctor from performing an abortion.
Senator Hendricks.
Well, in response to that, Senator Brown, the Medical Practices Act has penalties for people who are performing medical procedures in which they don't hold a license to do that particular medical procedure. So since an abortion is a medical procedure, there's other portions of the law that would handle, and believe me, these boards do go after people if they're not doctors or not nurses or whatever their ability, their license is to perform procedures.
Senator Brown.
So basically what you're saying is that there's a duplication in the statutes, one in the medical practices area and one in 0.455, and we shouldn't have both of them there.
I think it's a redundancy.
Yeah, but it has nothing to do then with constitutionality. I think we're repealing for some other
reason.
It says make technical changes, and I don't know if that's a technical change or not. We have apparently two prohibitions on the statutes. Eliminating one is not a technical change. It's a substantive removal. We just passed the statute making hazing a crime. There are other provisions on the law that, you know, they cover generally the same area.
Counsel.
I think it may be a combination of the two things. The Benson opinion specifically held that 435, 455 is unconstitutional. Some of the behavior that it covers is constitutionally protected behavior. Any behavior not covered that's not constitutionally protected would come under the Medical Practices Act and would involve procedures on the part of the doctors.
Okay, do we have the Medical Practices Act before us so I can see that is covered? I don't have anything in my file.
The first page of Ms. Radich's memo points out what it covers.
I have it. Okay. She, and what... If you were to aid a non-doctor in performing an abortion or aid the woman in performing self-abortion, does that come under the Medical Practices Act? Is that a surgical operation, or what is it? Under what provision of the Medical Practices Act is that? I have the...
Is that the Medical Practices Act?
This is the Medical Practices Act.
We have the Medical Practices Act before.
Okay, so the question is, under what provision of the Medical Practices Act would there be prescriptions against a person aiding a non-doctor in performing an abortion or aiding a woman in aborting herself?
Well, I imagine on the procedure, if it was giving someone a drug, a prescriptive drug, if it was using a curettage or a surgical procedure, all those come under the, you can't give out prescriptive drugs. I don't know if there's some form of abortion that you can use that you would be able to do it without prescriptive drugs or surgery.
Well, I don't see it. I'm asking counsel. I have the.
Have you read the
constitutional decision? Say you can't intervene in the first 3 months. So. If you're not doing it by prescriptive drug or surgery, I don't think you can constitutionally intervene. Yeah. Anyway.
Mr. Chairman, I've read the prohibited acts under 677.085, and I don't see this this listed.
Senator Gardner,
you know when you read 435.415 through 435.495. I'm having trouble finding out exactly what it is that Ms. Radish is referring to here when she asserts ORS 435.415 through ORS 435.495 require that an abortion be performed by a physician. Now, there are statutes that refer to physicians. For instance, 435.425 says no pregnancy shall be terminated unless two physicians who are neither related to each other by blood or marriage have each certified in writing the circumstances. But apparently, she seems to assert that there's some kind of a recodification or a more specific codification of the Medical Practices Act's requirements that only physicians would be doing this procedure. And I'm just having trouble finding that in that set of statutes. Maybe counsel could help me.
Well, of course, we just heard the argument.
I just wanted
to draw there that some of the Medical Practice Act limits the performing of abortions just to physicians.
To what?
Just to physicians.
Mr. Chair, could I share?
Senator Hendricks.
Sherry Ozer from the Women's Rights Coalition just shared with me a legal opinion from Kathleen Buffet, which is a research of Attorney General's opinions and statutes. I guess this was prepared in 81 when this bill was originally considered then in the House Human Resources. And this is on page 6 of this memorandum. It says, according to the Attorney General, ORS 435455, which provides for criminal penalties with reference to the justifiability criteria of ORS 435415, is constitutional in its entirety, because the criteria upon which it is based is likewise unconstitutional. Performance of an abortion by a physician is not criminal, and the performance of an abortion by a non-physician is the unauthorized practice of law, a misdemeanor under ORS 677.990.
That's an opinion, and I can respect the opinion, but I'm trying to see where she also said that, at that time, the repeal of 435.435 was deemed to be a desirable thing. We've now got amendment before us that indicates that was a mistake and we shouldn't have been doing that. But still the question is, and I haven't had answered, where in the definition of what constitutes a practice of medicine is
the
proportion of abortion by
not... Well, the is determined by their administrative rules and by their actions with the practice of medicine. The Attorney General here says a performance of an abortion by a non-physician is unauthorized practice of medicine and is a misdemeanor under ORS 677.991.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Gardner.
If I could ask Ms. Radish that question that I have of where it is she sees in those statutes, 435.415 through 435.495, any kind of a more specific codification of the Medical Practices Act requirement that only a physician may perform these services. I simply don't, maybe I'm just missing it in that series of statutory references.
Rita Radich, President, Right to Life, Oregon, and Portland attorney. Under ORS 435.415, sub 3, a justifiable termination of a pregnancy shall be performed only by a physician.
Okay.
Now, in addition, the whole, you read the section as a whole, as I'm sure was enacted, the intention appears to be throughout the whole act that it be clear that only positions are...
But you're not asserting that that would withstand constitutional scrutiny, sub 3.
Yes, I believe it would, except for the in the hospital aspect.
How about the justifiable?
Certainly. Presumably any abortion nowadays for any reason at any time is a justifiable termination of pregnancy. So,
but there's a that's a term of art under 435.415.
Well, in that case, it could be deleted. I don't think it makes any difference if it's left in or out at this point.
Are you satisfied now that, the Attorney General's opinion has been recited to you?
I think that's legislative counsel.
Oh, but they're quoting from an Attorney General.
I'm personally still have questions about it simply because we have nowhere to find that an abortion is what's commonly termed a surgical procedure. I know that's the way it's termed in the pro-abortion, pro-life.
Yeah, but no, this is the way
it's not been defined.
Well, it has been defined, though, by Attorney General's opinion. Could you read that sentence again?
The Attorney General's opinion is not binding on our courts.
According to the Attorney General, says ORS 435455 is unconstitutional in its entirety. It says performance of an abortion by a physician is not criminal. Performance of an abortion by a non-physician is unauthorized practice of medicine, a misdemeanor under ORS 677.990.
Well, that brings up something else. I believe that section she just cited is one of those sections that are being repealed, or at least referenced to the abortion in that section is being repealed.
677.990.
No, that's not so.
Is that not one of them?
It's 190.
Now, I have to say, in reading this again, I'm not sure whether this reference refers to the attorney. The first part of the paragraph refers to the Attorney General opinion. And in reading it over, I'm not sure if that is legislative counsel's opinion or a recitation of the Attorney General's opinion. The reference to the Attorney General is the fact that 435455 in its entirety is unconstitutional.
That was declared.
And then
so
it goes on to say performance of an abortion by a physician is not criminal. Performance of an abortion by a non-physician is the unauthorized practice of medicine, a misdemeanor under ORS 677.990.
Well,
I only know that I know when I was county attorney, I dealt with a situation which there was a dispute between the Board of Medical Examiners and the county about the use of physician's assistants, not on abortions, but on other medical types of procedures. And I'll tell you, they do police these boards, these jurisdictional boards, really police, I think I was giving out birth control pills, really police the perimeters as far as what they'll allow, you know, different disciplines in medical providers.
Yep. And my concern has been that in the movement, in our back and forth, the politics of it, we have seen indications of, especially nurse practitioners who desired to do abortions and would like to see all reference to only physicians performing them out of the law. And I know that's been a feeling and a pressure and a movement. Whether they intended in this particular bill, I don't know, but I do see a danger.
Well, I don't think that's in this bill, but...
Aren't nurses hospital employees or members of hospital medical staffs who are not required to participate in the termination of a pregnancy if they notify the hospital of the election not to participate? So they don't have to participate.
No, she's concerned they'll want to.
They want to do that.
So they won't just have doctors.
Okay, then is it my understanding that the Attorney General says that, in effect, I gather it's the implication that... the performance of an abortion must be a surgical procedure. That's the only peg he can hang his hand on. He hasn't named what the peg is, but that must be it, because there's no other a peg that he could have hung his hand on.
Well, an abortion is a drug.
Many are not performed with drugs, so that, you know, there are many different types of abortion procedures.
No, but like morning after
pills. Well, drug is covered by the Medical Practices Act as well.
If it's a prescription drug. Well, one of the things you're looking at, too, we so easily forget that one of the reasons many of these things were in there is because illegal abortions were performed. There's no reason to think that illegal abortions do not occur now with drugs that are not prescription drugs, techniques that are not what are done in the licensed abortion clinics or hospitals. So there's still a potential danger there.
Well, secondly, you raised the point, Mr. Chairman, that... 435.495 requires the health division to make reports of induced abortions, and this is being repealed. Now, is there a constitutional requirement that this be repealed?
No.
Well, why, I ask the counsel or the sponsors of the bill, why is this reporting requirement being repealed?
It's being repealed because it's reporting required under the Act, sections 415 through sections 405 to 495, which, if the substance of the Act is unconstitutional, you can't require reporting under it. 465.110 is the statute that makes places where abortions are performed a nuisance. And 677, 188, and 190 are the statutes that suspend a doctor's license for performing an abortion. And that was what the reporting was for. There will be reporting, no doubt, because the vital statistics people need to report them.
You're saying that 435.495 is unconstitutional in that it mandates the reporting of induced abortions.
I didn't say it was unconstitutional. It's not. It's just, if you take away the position of the proponents of the bill, and I think what Steve Walters testified to is that if it's reporting under the Act and the major provisions of the Act are unconstitutional, then you can't require reporting under a number of statutes that have been declared unconstitutional. So 495 is not unconstitutional. It just has nothing to hold it together.
It doesn't. Can't stand by
itself. Head is cut off. The feet don't work very well.
No, it.
Well, I think there's sufficient there that everyone understands that it's abortion statistics that are being reported, and in fact, over the last 10 years, in spite of this being on the books and in the shape it's in, which is not beautiful, reporting has continued the last 10 years, and I think really
and
good reporting in Oregon.
And it will.
But if this is repealed, it will help the division bother. They don't have
it. It will be. It will definitely be.
It'll continue to be reporting.
It's a matter of getting it into the shape that they need it into in the vital statistics bill to sync with all the national.
Right.
The problem with that bill is that that's a 1977 act, and a lot of the cases defining abortion reporting have come since that.
Right.
Okay. The chair now moves to adopt Legislative Council amendments dated 6/14/83. Discussion. If not, is there objection?
Mr. Chairman, no objection. Just had a few other questions trying to clarify this for myself.
Well, I'd rather take a vote if you object.
Ms. Radish has raised a number of points that haven't been addressed by the amendments and haven't been addressed by anything I have in my file. It'll just take me a minute or two more. If I may, there's a she talks about 435.445 regulating emergency-induced abortions and requiring appropriate reports to the hospital health division. Now, you know why that's being there?
I'm sorry, what section was it?
435.445. That's one of
you. Were you at the hearing on this bill, Senator Bennett?
Yes, I was there.
And these topics were all discussed at great length.
No, I was there. I listened very, very carefully, and that the necessity for repealing that was not discussed by anyone.
Well, the whole subject of that hearing was whether or not we should repeal these provisions.
I understand this. Well, then maybe I can ask you, Mr. Chairman, why do we need to repeal .445?
Because these are unconstitutional provisions that we're repealing based on court decisions.
We just discussed one, .495, and our counsel said it's not unconstitutional. Now, we're not repealing provisions that simply are unconstitutional. We're repealing other provisions that are substantively in the way, apparently.
Mr. Chair, I think that the reason we're repealing it is part of the unconstitutional scheme, because the way I read it is the reason they had that in there was to pick up people that were performing abortions, which were illegal under the law. They'd come into an emergency room, someone having induced the abortion, I think that was a common way to get around the restrictive abortion laws in those days. And so this was a way to try to pick up on them.
It's the emergency exception from the operation of the statute. So if the statute can't operate constitutionally, you don't need an emergency exception.
If I may add, this is also applicable to the situation where a woman comes in unconscious and maybe from a car accident, and the physician determines that he thinks she ought to have an abortion. And there's no one there to give consent, and it's an emergency thing. At least there's some protection to her that certain standards were met or certain reports were made. This is a very grave decision for her and for her family.
Wouldn't that be handled under any kind of emergency room treatment? Where, I mean, they could be making all kinds of decisions about you while you're unconscious, you know, whether to cut off your leg or...
That's true. This happens to be, I think most people understand, it's a very serious matter for many families.
I know it's serious, but I'm saying they do all kinds of serious things in emergency rooms, and I think they have to have, they have procedures for your consent, or getting someone next of kin or someone to give consent in those kinds of situations. I mean, I think without having the statute, but I think the reason is it just won't, it falls of its own weight, because it was part of the police power regulation of abortion, which was declared unconstitutional.
Well, let me just mention one last...
10 years, and this
happened. They marry each other again.
Yes, and so, and they may have children who are over 18 and attending school where there would be a support obligation. So then you have the question of whether or not you want to allow this procedure. That's the point I was trying to make. That sounds far-fetched, but that happens.
Wouldn't it be better though to say that there's no child under the parties, that there's a support obligation from one party to the other, or something like that? Because I would.
Instead of pegging it with the mic.
Or no children under 18, I suppose.
Well, I just wouldn't want to exclude, I mean, not have people who just happen to have children from other marriages not be able to use this service. Because they do not have any support.
Well, if we don't fine-tune this, we're going to let a few people through the sieve that we might disclose.
What I'm pointing out is our observations that I had. That is, do you want to let people to use a simplified procedure if there are children that should be owed some support obligation? And the use of the word minor children would allow the situation where there are children over 18 and may still be attending school where there might be a support obligation if the father could be caught. This simplified procedure might be used.
Well, if we put it modifying on that first line, there are no minor children born to the party, or no minor children, or children over 18 attending school born to the party. So that shows it's their children.
All right. Or adopted.
Or adopted during the marriage.
Is the word dependent children, is that too broad? Because that...
Prior to the marriage.
I think you have to show there's some legal obligation either because they're biological parents or adopted parents.
Yeah, there are no minor children or children attending school of the parties born or adopted during the marriage.
Well, why don't we adopt that conceptually? Sure,
the language is in the code dealing with the support obligation. I think it could be picked up out of that.
Because just no children attending school.
There are no minor children, there are no born to parties or adopted by the parties. There are no children born to the attending, over 18 attending schools, born of the parties.
Or adopted during the marriage.
During marriage. Period. The wife is not now pregnant. Period.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never be able to say it again.
I was afraid.
On the table.
Well, so Kathy can do it, though it is. It's everything here plus.
Well, you just rewrite a little bit. There are no minor children either born to the parties or adopted by the parties during the marriage.
That's what we
there
have.
There are no children over age 18 attending school, either born to the parties or adopted by the parties during the marriage.
Yeah.
Period. The wife is not now pregnant.
Yeah.
Did you get that down?
And then that other one that's already in there, no minor children born to or adopted by the parties prior to the marriage, which is in the
current language.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got that okay.
It's been a long day. It's on the tape, right?
Is there any objection to Senator Henderson's motion? Not, it's adopted. Now, what do we need to do next?
How about moving the bill?
We've got to figure out how much savings is going to be the maximum amount of savings.
Can I make
No,
there's a blank. We need to fill something.
No. She fills that.
Oh, she tells us. Or he.
Right, or he.
Okay.
Can I make one other observation? This really happened.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I know it's late and you all want to end up. This procedure is very similar to the procedure that now exists in the code for decree by affidavit, except that there's some qualifications to get into this particular procedure. It differs substantially, though, in that, as you know, for the procedure for a decree by affidavit, it's necessary to file an affidavit and make out a prima facie case, and then it says the court may enter the decree. The alternative is the court can order an appearance of the parties and require a testimony to put on a prima facie case. This bill, if you read Section 3, makes a substantial change in that philosophy, in that there is no requirement of any affidavit. There's simply a statement in Section 3 that upon application of the petitioner, the court shall enter the decree.
That whole section was eliminated.
Was the whole section is eliminated?
I'm not sure that that's what we meant to do. That was the section about the 90-day versus the 30-day waiting period.
Well, that's the first portion of it. But
which section are you on now?
Section 3.
Yeah, I didn't think we'd done it. Well, it is sort of an administrative. I thought that was the idea, to make it an administrative rather than a judicial one. Well, I mean, it's sort of a judicial one. The judge signs it, but it's really, it's an experiment. It's an administrative procedure.
Is your point that they're not filing an affidavit anymore?
There's no requirement in this bill to file an affidavit or otherwise in any fashion put on any prima facie case. It simply says you file the petition if you meet the criterion. After the period of default, you apply upon application of the petitioner, the court shall enter the decree. And that language differs substantially from the code, the section that deals with decree by affidavit, because there it specifically says an affidavit must be filed setting forth a prima facie case, and then the court may enter the decree.
The amendments are deleting that Section 3, aren't they?
Right, and then what you have is the language on the first page that says a marriage may be dissolved by the summary dissolution procedure. I don't know what that does to the sponsors of the bill.
I think that has the same effect. I don't think it has any significance to delete that Section 3, because if a marriage, that is mandatory, may in that sense is mandatory language.
If the entire Section 3 is deleted, then I would assume that the only way they could proceed would be through the code as it now exists, by filing an affidavit.
I don't believe that's correct.
I think we've got a form here that isn't an affidavit form for the petition.
Right. It doesn't set forth a prima facie case. If you read it, all it says, it's a non-military affidavit.
Well, then we've just undone the whole bill, I think, because I thought that was the whole idea, that it was an administrative procedure.
What is missing from the prima facie case? Saying there's irreconcilable
residency,
differences?
Residency, irreconcilable differences, those sorts of things.
No, residency is required. You have to, if the jurisdictional requirements of ORS 107025 and 075, we've added in, so that's residency.
Alleged residency, but there's no requirement of any proof. Not even in a form of an affidavit. See, what we've had, and I understand, Representative Hendrickson, that the procedure we're trying to simplify and basically provide for some administrative divorce procedure, and that's all well and good.
The only difference as to residency between this and an affidavit is they're affirming what their residence is, and all the difference from an affidavit would be they'd be swearing.
Well, if there's no
notary,
there's no requirement of proof of a prima facie case. If a judge is, in reading the affidavit, has concern about whether or not there's something that he wants to know more about, there's no provision for the court to require them to come in and either file an affidavit, as under the present code, or to require them to come in and make proof. There's no requirement in this bill of any prima facie case, nor is there even the ability of the court to to call for it. It simply says it's a mandatory act. You file a petition, which is simply a bare allegation, not even a sworn statement, just signed by the petitioner. You wait the period of default, the period of 90 days to run, and then you apply to the court, and the court shall enter the judgment. The applicant, there's no requirement of any prima facie case as there is under the existing law. And I just wanted to point that out, that is a substantial change.
It is a different concept. You know?
It is a substantial change.
Okay.
Why shouldn't the judge be able to
ask,
I'm not asking you that, excuse me, why shouldn't the judge be able to ask if they look at this and have a question?
Well, I don't care one way or another, but I think the idea of the bill was it's sort of like, you know, you go in and any other agency, you fill in forms, and if you fill in your forms properly.
But what if they aren't filled in properly?
Then they return them to you.
Then they return
them
to you.
Is that what happens? Does this say anything about what happens if the blanks aren't filled in correctly?
The clerk always has the right to not accept them.
But it doesn't say that in the statute. I mean, does it?
No.
I'm sure the judge
didn't
find them.
He
wouldn't be able to mandamus them if they weren't filled in.
Why don't we just plug into it the ability of the judge to examine this for its sufficiency, and if he or she chooses to inquire, have the petitioner make a showing. Judge.
Similar language to what now exists, is saying the court may enter the decree instead of shall. That does then give the judge the opportunity to call for an affidavit or sworn testimony.
We would have no problem with that.
The concept is that
wouldn't be necessary because there are no children. There is no substantial property. There is nothing that the judge should have to question. If the form is not filled out properly, it should be sent back by the clerk to be filled out properly and not accepted for filing. However, it seems to me that wouldn't be a problem to make that a may and allow the judge the opportunity to ask for an affidavit or the appearance. I would prefer the appearance of the individual since we're not including an affidavit form in here.
Mm. Senator,
what was the policy reason why you didn't want sworn affidavits?
That was merely to comply with the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure, which did away with verifications, and
for example, if later on it turns out there was fraudulent, someone got someone to file one of these things and lie on it, that kind of stuff. There is no, you know, they haven't purged. Well, I guess you could say they purged.
Yes, the legislative history of the rules says that when you sign a petition or complaint, you are saying that it is true and that it is.
So you're saying foundation. They do make out a prima facie case, that they are making
filing
out.
Filing of
by
a pleading is not
signing.
Proof, unless it's offered as proof. There's
yeah.
The rule is that a pleading is not proof unless it's offered into evidence. So if this bill was passed as it is now, we have a decree would be taken with no proof, no prima facie case whatsoever. And that's, you could do that. You can legislate that. It's just a question of policy. And there would be no authority for the judge to call for proof. And I'd point out that the bill does provide for this procedure to be used even in cases up to $30,000 in personal property. So those aren't minor amounts. And a judge in reviewing it, and I hope judges will, might have some concern about that.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gardner.
Would you be satisfied, Judge, if it said may and the judge could call him in for personal appearance?
I would prefer to have the similar language to what's in the statute now about in the decree by affidavit.
Where there's children. So they can call, they can either have affidavit or call.
I would like to ask maybe if Julian, the judge, could get together, and I would think you don't disagree on this, it doesn't sound to me like.
Not really.
So could maybe, if you would not mind taking time from your other duties to... maybe if we could run it by you and then see if it would look all right.
Because then we could take financial. Why don't you move that? And
all right, I would move that there be a provision inserted here that would say that the judge could require a further showing at his or her discretion.
Prior to granting a decree.
Prior to granting the decree.
Either in person or by affidavit.
Yeah, either way. And then that language, council would draft that up and would show it to these two individuals. And
that's similar to what's in the code now.
Okay.
Yeah, 107.095 sub 4 is the affidavit section.
Is there objection to Senator Gardner's motion? Not as adopted. Now, the chair moves the legislative council draft 61483 that we've gone over. Is there objection to that? It's adopted. Is there anything else we need to change in this?
Do you want to move it out now, or you want to wait until that language gets back, or whichever?
Why don't we move it out, then subject to looking at the language? I think it's pretty straightforward.
We've got to rush this legislation on through.
All right.
Really, the session.
We want to
keep it moving alone.
Right. We can't wait at all.
Move it to
Senator Brown now moves Senate Bill 175.
View of the late hour.
View of the late hour. As amended to forward a new pass recommendation. Does this have a substitute?
No.
Is there, please call the roll.
Brown.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Hendrickson.
Aye.
Wyers.
Aye. Motion carried. I would like unanimous consent to change my vote from aye to nay on Senate Bill 42. Would anybody object to that?
No.
Wouldn't affect the final passage. Okay. Then I'll be recorded as voting no.
You going to file a minority report?
If anybody wants to join me, takes two. I've been thinking about a minority report, but I think it might be educational, but it is late in the session. Jim, we have so many bills that we bring out on the floor that the rest of the members would probably find us rather presumptuous.
That's too esoteric, I think.
I'd be glad to join you in a
minority report. But didn't you vote aye? You
yes, I have to change my vote. We've got four here.
I'm the lone representative of the majority. I feel like someone would be illegal.
Things
change. I guess if you wanted to change your mind.
I know, right? We need to go over again.
No. What's the mathematics of this? Do you need a...
Well, let's see. You voted aye. There were four people here.
We all voted aye.
So all three of us could change the nose without changing
yes,
the final outcome.
You could. But I might reject that.
How about just two voting?
Well, under other business of the committee, Senator Hanby had a report to give. She's filed a complaint with the lobby, the Capitol Club. I think she said it was the Capitol Club, didn't she? Right,
I didn't
the Ethics Commission.
About what?
It came right at the beginning of the meeting when there were so many people here. She's filed a complaint. I think it's with the Capitol Club rather than the Ethics Commission that a witness we had here last night, or a potential witness, was marauded out in the hall by a lobbyist.
What I told you about?
Yeah.
Not last night.
No,
who was that?
Night.
Or can you talk
no.
about
that? Well, it was somebody else told me about that. Oh. Was it the bill on the, I think it was the bill on the, why don't we adjourn so we can turn the tape off, because I may...